Time to welcome another new specialist correspondent to the stable of regular night's guests. Normally, he's sitting on the other side of the glass screen, pushing the buttons. I'm here in the padded room. But you can hear him making music, and most pertinently, for the next 20 minutes or so, he's a budding writer of horror fiction. I'm talking about Denver Grinnell, and Denver's in the studio with me now. Kia ora, Denver.
Kia ora, Brian. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. Why is it Denver? It's so many seemingly nice, gentle, well-adjusted people such as yourself get a kick out of watching others suffer.
I don't think it's about watching others suffer that gives them the kick. It's the thrill, the fear factor, you know, that's being put into situations that you are not normally in, and the visceral thrill that you get from, you know, being put through those sort of situations that you're not used to in your everyday life.
So you get scared.
You do get scared, you know, but it's like going on a roller coaster. It's fun. It's fun to be scared, you know. People like to go to haunted houses. They like to, you know, jump out of airplanes, you know. Yeah. That's probably part of the, you know.
And for you, it's been scared a bit, and that gives you a thrill, and you're hooked on that.
Mm, yeah.
And you've been hooked on it for quite a while, because the first example, little soundtrack from a horror movie, or maybe a thriller, depending on your point of view, this takes us back to a movie that you first watched at the tender age of 4. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Had to keep it running at least till the tuba solo, because it's a great tuba solo. That's the theme from Jaws, Steven Spielberg horror/thriller. John Williams was writing the music. At 4 years old,
mm-hmm. Yep.
What were your parents thinking?
They kind of weren't thinking. It's a bit of a sad story. I was 4 years old, and we were staying in a hotel room in Hamilton when my grandfather was sadly succumbing to cancer in hospital. So the family stayed in the hotel over, I think it was a period of a week. And while I was there, you know, the hotels, I used to show movies on the hotel channel. So I spent my days playing in the car park of this nondescript sort of motor inn. And then every once in a while, I'd go in and turn the TV on. And the two movies they showed on repeat that week were Star Wars and Jaws.
So and Jaws made the most impression on you.
Well, I vividly remember being outside playing and my auntie saying, "Denver, come inside and look at the big fish." And so I walk in, right on the scene where the shark is on the boat, chomping down on Quint, the shark hunter, and dragging him underwater. And that was it. It was all over for me.
And you kind of went, oh.
Yeah. And then she tried to tell me it was, it's okay, it's just tomato sauce for blood and the teeth are just cardboard.
Were you crying?
I wasn't crying.
No?
I think I was just more... I was riveted. I was actually riveted. It's why I remember it so well, is that I was scared, you know, shiteless, but also drawn to it somehow.
Tell me, why did your aunt think that you wanted to see a big fish? Was it getting dark?
I don't know what she was saying.
Was she thinking, let's get him in?
Yeah.
It's dark. It's crazy after dark in Hamilton.
Yeah, maybe she thought I needed to be scared. Maybe she thought I needed to, you know.
Anyway, that obviously caught your imagination.
Mm.
But... the horror story that I think you were telling this story to me earlier, the horror story that maybe first caught your imagination is associated with this music. Now that's a bit of the old Dies Irae chant from the Latin Mass for the Dead. day of wrath, day of horror, that kind of stuff, waiting for the judgment call from the big guy upstairs, used by Stanley Kubrick in the film The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew about this film before you saw it, right?
Oh, I knew about the book before.
Oh, really?
Not that I didn't read the book until much later, but I was. This is another one of those childhood memories that just sticks with you for the rest of your life. And it was, we were at a Guy Fawkes, you know, gathering. This is probably in the 80s, and I was probably 7 or 8, 8 or 9, I can't remember. And it was like a huge bonfire. It was out in the country, out in Canterbury. And it was a huge bonfire.
Big bonfire. The Northwest is blowing, yep, getting ready to spread the love.
Kids are running around throwing pohas at each other.
Yep.
Remember pohas?
Yes, I do.
Yep.
Tom Thumbs.
The big one. No, the big version.
Oh, the big ones.
Tom Thumbs.
We used to call them Thunderbolts.
Ones. Yeah, right.
And the pohas, well, they were double. There was the Tom Thumb, the little ones,
yep,
double happies, reasonable size,
mm-hmm,
and then there were the Thunderbolts, which were massive, and then there were the even bigger Mighty Cannons, which were a disappointment because they promised more than they delivered.
Yeah, but I think the other ones that got banned, the big ones.
Yeah,
I remember we were all standing around, and there was a bunch of older kids and me and my brothers, and this older kid was holding court, and he literally just told us the whole story of The Shining from Stephen King, from the start all the way through to the end, and I remember him describing the, you know, the house, the hotel, and the hedge animals that crept slowly closer to, you know, each time they'd move closer to, you know, the boy Danny and Jack Torrance.
This person obviously was a really good storyteller. What happened to this friend of yours?
I haven't kept in touch, no.
Right.
No. But they literally, I think they probably read the book at age 11, which is when I started reading
Stephen
King. And
was it based on him reading the book or watching the film?
I'm sure he'd read the book because in the film, the hedge animals, I don't believe, move closer.
I don't think they do because, I've only seen the film and I can't remember much about hedge animals.
Mm.
I can remember a maze, which was kind of the downfall of whoever Jack Nicholson was playing.
Yeah, Jack Torrance.
Oh, Jack. But for you, was your first, okay, Jaws was that first sort of visceral response, age 4 on the telly.
Mm.
After that, was it reading or watching that really caught you?
Well, both. It was definitely both. But I've always been into film, always been a reader. I started off reading, you know, kind of sci-fi and fantasy, but then, you know, it was probably soon after that kid told me about The Shining, I started reading Stephen King. So that was, I think I read his short story collection, Night Shift, and then It, you know. It was my first 1,200-page book that I read at age 11, I think it was. And that was just an epic, you know, deep dive into horror. You know, that was the one that captured my sort of imagination and got me hooked.
When did you start writing?
Well, I was always writing as a kid and sort of up until probably in my early 20s, but I wasn't really writing horror. I just wrote short stories and just wrote random things, and I guess at some point I probably wanted to be like the next Irvine Welsh or Chuck Palahniuk or something ridiculous, and that was never going to happen. And then I think that's why I gave up writing, because it wasn't any good.
Well, what brought you back to it then?
Well, it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I just sort of got back into horror in a big way. It might have been, maybe it's my kind of early midlife crisis.
Right,
kind
you
of
needed
thing.
Something to thrill you up again.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think it might have been the fact that I had kids and I was sort of...
Do they want stories?
They do want stories.
They do?
You are telling stories constantly. I can tell a really good Black Panther story. You know, I've been making up Black Panther stories every night for the
Black
last...
Black Panther?
Black Panther from
As
Marvel.
As in Mystery Giant from Cats Marvel. Or Black Panther,
Black
the
Panther,
superhero.
Superhero, yeah,
right.
Yeah. My son's fixated with Black Panther, so I can tell a good Black Panther story.
When I was a kid, because you asked me off air to remember the first scary movie I saw, and I remember the things that scared me were not horror.
Mm.
I remember there was a scene in a film called The Railway Children, which was almost certainly rated G, but there was somebody stuck in a tunnel and the train was coming. And I was so upset, and poor Dad, who was rather enjoying the movie, had to drag me out because I was making such a fuss. I think The Wizard of Oz freaked me out.
Those flying monkeys.
The first actual horror that I watched was also on Guy Fawkes Night.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I can't remember the name of the movie, I was with my friend Andrew Crooks. He was tough as when it came to scary stuff. I mean, he'd read Jaws. He would go down. He was a great reader. And if he wanted peace and quiet on the school camp, we were at a school camp near Lake Taupo, he wanted to read in peace. So he got up early in the morning. He went down to the graveyard and sat amongst the graves and read his book. And, you know, it was just like, you are the staunchest guy, you know, just like legend. And we were watching this movie. It was on a, sort of a body snatchers. There's a beating heart put in the corpse, and the corpse comes back to life, and it's got a whole lot of goose pimples. And at that point, I've got to run.
Yeah.
But I still wanted Andrew to tell me what happened later on.
Exactly.
I can't remember. The first time I became aware of your interest in horror was when I saw a post you put up about John Carpenter's remake of The Thing. And that was the first horror movie I actually sat through.
Wow. Yeah, and that's an iconic one. That's probably my favourite horror movie, you know, up there with Jaws and The Shining. That's one I also saw age 11 at a friend's birthday party on Betamax video. I had no idea what I was watching.
Did your parents, are they just the, you know, this what doesn't kill them makes them stronger?
This was at a friend's birthday party, right. So, you know, we watched Mad Max and The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, and, you know, they were rental videos, so they didn't, the Betamax didn't have the VHS cover, so you couldn't see what the film was about. It was just in a nondescript sort of yellow case. So I was like, The Thing, okay, cool, let's watch that. And then, you know, 2 hours later, we were just, you know, shaken.
Yeah, but the basic premise of The Thing, for those who haven't seen it, and it's now, I think, at least three versions. What, could you describe it for us, Denver?
Well, I haven't seen the original version, to be
honest.
You haven't? No, I haven't. It's based on a short story, but John Carpenter basically...
I'm pretty sure it was the 1950s version.
Yeah, the 1950s version, Thing from Another Planet, or Another World, which I still have yet to see. But John Carpenter's version, I think they updated.
I remember the first scene, and there's a flying saucer rushing towards Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It heads down to Earth, crashes. Mm.
So it's basically about, you know, an alien sort of parasite or creature that needs hosts to sort of reproduce and
or just make them miserable, you know.
Yeah,
it's just a really grumpy parasite. It looks at other animals, perfect, just minding their own business, jumps inside them and mutates them.
Yeah. And then because it's in Antarctica, and you've got Kurt Russell, and there's a whole American research team that basically have to figure out what this thing is and try and survive.
Because they find the flying saucer.
They find
the
flying saucer, yeah.
And they think, you know, this is a triumph.
Mm.
Then they find a body or something. They bring it back.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's when the trouble starts.
Yeah, well, actually, it's already with them because the dog, right at the start, there's a helicopter chasing a dog through the snow, and the dog arrives at the American base, and the dog is the thing. Yeah, so that's escaped from the Norwegian base. The Norwegians fly after it with a helicopter, and they try and kill the dog. The helicopter explodes. Norwegians die, and then they've got the thing.
Yeah, which is inside the dog.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, and it all just escalates from there.
Yeah. And then later on, there's one bit where the thing, there's a head, the severed head, and it's sliding down the wall, and then it grows legs.
Yeah.
And somebody else says something which I can't repeat
on
family radio, but it's kind of a famous line. You got to be something kidding.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Now, I've got a soundtrack here, a little bit of the soundtrack to another classic movie that probably scared the bejesus out of a few people. Let's see how long it takes for us to recognize this. But you know, in some ways, the scariest bit of that is the sound of the shower.
Mm.
Doesn't that creep you out?
Yeah, and you know exactly what it's from. You hear the shower. You hear that jing jing.
Yep. Who wrote the music?
Bernard Herrmann, I believe.
Yeah.
Herrmann.
Mm. Genius, and he wrote, I think, the music for several Hitchcock films.
Yeah.
At least one other. I think it might have been Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
He did that, and of course, Psycho.
Yeah.
What is Psycho a classic for you?
It is. I've only seen it once, but it is. As one
what,
of those ones.
Because it scared you too much?
No, it's some films I just haven't, you know, you just don't necessarily revisit a lot, and for whatever reason. And I remember seeing it years ago, but it's just, you know, Hitchcock's the master of suspense. You know, he's just an expert at just twisting the knife and just keeping you on that, you know, on the edge, you know,
so to speak.
Mm.
Yeah. So for you, Hitchcock is somebody you rate?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm by no means an expert in his works or anything, but no, he's just, you know, that's probably Psycho. You probably would, I don't know if you classify it as horror as such, it's definitely horrific. It's, you know, probably more of a suspense thriller, but it's just has all those elements that you find in horror and that go all the way through to Halloween. And
speaking of which, that little jingle is from what?
Friday the 13th.
Okay. Yeah. When I asked you, can you send me some examples of soundtracks and things in terms of your catalogue of horror movies that are in your own memory, and you suggested Friday the 13th. What is it about Friday the 13th? Because how many parts have there been to Friday the 13th? 41?
41, no.
13?
Maybe there was 8 originally, then another two, maybe 12.
What's the premise of Friday the 13th?
Friday the 13th was like, it was like one of the sort of first, not the first slasher, but it was one of the ones that after Halloween. Halloween was like the first kind of slasher that kicked off the movement.
And the bad guy in Halloween is Jason, and Jason's always got a
Michael
baseball
Myers
mask
in Halloween.
On.
Jason Voorhees is the one with the hockey mask.
Yeah.
But in the original Friday the 13th, which is a spoiler for a 40-plus-year-old movie, it's not Jason, it's his mother, Pamela Voorhees. And but people often forget that, like even the DVD cover has a hockey mask on it, and the hockey mask doesn't show up until part 3, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So who's Freddy then?
Freddy is from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Ah,
yeah. He's the guy that kills you in your dreams.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you fall asleep and he's after you, he'll come and prey on you in your dreams.
Right. So Friday the 13th is different to Freddy Krueger is from Nightmare on Elm Street. Right.
Yeah.
And Freddy's got the long...
He's got the clawed hand. He's got the cool glove. Yeah. And he's got the burnt skin.
But Friday the 13th is Jason, and before that, Jason's mum.
Jason's mum was in the first one, and in the first few films, they aren't supernatural. It's basically a slasher, you know. Jason's mum is getting revenge on the counsellors that on the counsellors at Crystal Lake Camp, because he, you know, died. Her son Jason died there when he was a boy, so she's taking her revenge out on them. And then once that was successful and they needed sequels, they brought Jason in, and he didn't die, and he's been living in the woods all these years.
Yeah.
And
he seems to defy the laws of physics.
He does, and then he does die, and then he becomes a supernatural being before too long. So they just keep reinventing
right.
it because it's like, okay, we
need
to make
more
money. Yeah,
you know, why keep it going if it's getting people to go to the movies?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Hey, this is a track from. It's not Friday the 13th. It's from that other guy.
I'll see you in hell.
Tell him Freddy sent you.
Right, so that's Nightmare on Elm Street.
That was
Freddy.
That's Freddy.
That's
Freddy Krueger.
And what's the origin story of Freddy?
Wes Craven, the creator of Nightmare on Elm Street, I believe he'd been reading up on a phenomenon where people had been, I think it was someone who'd come from like war-torn countries, I'm not sure which country exactly, but they'd suffered through trauma, and then they'd been having these dreams that were so frightening that they'd actually would die. They'd die in their sleep, literally die in their sleep. And it was this phenomenon, I'm not really sure. Yeah. And he thought that was interesting and thought there's definitely a story in that. So he created the character of Freddy Krueger, who, you know, was a convicted, you know, child murderer who got burnt to death by the parents of his victims. And then he came back to, you know, get
sometimes
revenge.
You're better off not killing these guys, eh?
Well, yeah, I mean, and yeah. Well, you got to do a decent job, you know. You got to make sure they're buried in consecrated ground or something, and you know.
For you, there's this horror. There's also the supernatural.
Mm.
Now, how important is that in the thrill you get? The possibility that dead could be undead. As a zombie or a ghost,
it all works for me. You know, realistic horror, like, you know, like Home Invasion, that scares the bejesus out of me. Supernatural horror, you know, yeah, it's just such a vast world of storytelling there, you know, and folklore and tradition that can be drawn on, and you know, that goes into the
mix.
Yeah, yeah.
So finally, Denver, maybe if you could recommend a book or a movie, I don't know, maybe next time we'll talk about them, because this is just an introductory session that you think might be a starting point for somebody.
I mean, I would always go to Stephen King. That's what, you know, especially people from, you know, 80s kids that grew up with horror, we all got into Stephen King, reading Stephen King at probably too young an age, you know.
Yeah. Watching at too young an age.
Yeah. But, you know, definitely get one of Stephen King's classics. Give The Shining a read, or Salem's Lot, or if you want to go big, go for It, you know.
All 1,200 pages.
Yeah, all 1,200 pages. Go big.
Denver, it's been great talking with you. Thanks for scaring the bejesus out of me.
Thanks for having me.